visiting Houses of Parliament. This is called the Old Assembly. The new assembly, National Assembly, where you always go to. We basically use this one for meetings, but it's the place where the ANC caucus meets every Thursday. The ANC caucus is the ANC members in Parliament. So in the, come again? Where do you meet? Where? I don't know where DA meets. Where's your caucus room? Okay. So, that's but that's where we meet every Thursday. So you're welcome. Perhaps before we proceed, I'll request the honorable members who are here, for the benefit of all of us, to know who exactly is here. If I was to start, I'm Sifiso Buthelezi, the chairperson of the appropriation, standing committee on appropriation. Honorable Kaito.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Zola Lezana, member of the committee on appropriations.
Dipuo Peters, member of this committee. Goedemiddag, good afternoon. My name is Dana Joseph, member of this committee, and chair also apologize for member Sarupen's absence this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, can you please introduce your delegation or let them introduce themselves, whichever way you choose?
Maybe Chair, I should just let that be. I'm Jabu Mabuza, I'm chairperson of ESCOM.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. Caleb Kasson, Chief Financial Officer. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Balotile Makubela, non-executive director at ESCOM.
Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, honorable members. I'm Pulani Molokwane. I'm the non-executive director here.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Cindy Mabasukoyana. I'm a non-exec at ESCOM, and I chair the Audit and Risk Committee.
Your executive team?
Good afternoon, Chair members. Rod Crompton, I'm a non-executive director at ESCOM.
I'm the company secretary.
Good afternoon, honorable chair members. Jan Dobrolse, Chief Operating Officer, ESCOM.
Good afternoon, chair members. My name is Becky, I'm the director of the fire.
Good afternoon, Lebohan Degani, DP Ministry.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Musa Zamisa, Presenter of the Committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Darren Arends. I'm the Committee Secretary. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm Sifiso Makagula, the Content Advisor for the Committee.
Good afternoon, Chair, honorable members and colleagues from ESCOM. My name is Dumisani Chanchus from Parliamentary Budget Office.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Yvonne Manakaza, committee assistant helping in this committee. Thank you.
Okay, can I also welcome if members of the media here? You are welcome. A brief press before on the wood.
Good afternoon, members and colleagues. My name is Osina Komani, member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
Thank you so much. Any apologies, Darren?
Chairperson, we received apologies from Ms. Dikhale and Ms. Ndlangwini. Thank you.
Just a background to this meeting. Perhaps even before I do that, the chairperson of the ESCOM board has communicated with me and is apologizing around 6, he left to leave, but he's just a member of a bigger board. He assured me that he's having capable men and women who will remain behind if by 1800 hours we are not done. And I don't think we'll be done looking at the gravity of the issues that we wanted to put out to discuss with your good selves. Background to this meeting, about 2 weeks ago we were at ESCOM playing our oversight responsibility as the Standing Committee on Appropriations. We met different players, we met the executive team or teams, we met heads of different divisions, and we briefly met the chairperson. Our intention when we went to ESCOM was to start with the board, especially with the African culture. When you are going to get into my house, you must start with me. I shouldn't see you going from one house to the other without me knowing what you are doing. So we started with the chairperson, wanted to start with the board so that we could have said to you, why are we in your premises? So, but it clashed with many other things that you were doing on that day. So we're given a green light by the chairperson that we could continue with the other members of ESCOM that we met. So I must say that we got quite a good cooperation. Chairperson, members of the board, from whoever we met that day, we asked questions, and it became very clear. We are clarified. There were issues that the committee felt that we needed also to take those issues with you. Our intention was to start with you and end with you. I think the end part is what we're doing today. Briefly, the Standing Committee on Appropriations, what are we responsible for? All the monies which are appropriated by this parliament, they must go through us as a committee. As board members, I always say we're like one of the subcommittees of the board. So we're a subcommittee of parliament of the National Assembly. And we look at all issues pertaining to appropriation, money that parliament approves that can be spent by National Treasury and other departments and other entities like your good selves. So that's what we are responsible for. When the Minister of Finance comes to Parliament and presents a budget, if you like, there's a proposal to Parliament. He proposes to Parliament and it becomes an appropriation bill. And once Parliament and both houses have voted on that appropriation bill, does it become an act and then people can start spending money? I think people who have been at ESCOM for a long time, they know that they didn't have business with the Standing Committee on Appropriation. You hardly saw us. But from the time that we started recapitalizing you, that was an invitation to us. So that's why now we're able, because we must also follow money, look at how money is being used, the efficiencies in your expenditures, and so on and so forth, and to say the money that we appropriate is being used for what we were told it was going to be used for. When a coach, if a rugby coach, a football coach, wins, you must know that all what the people have said, they just say, oh, it's good, we are winning. They never tell you which player to put in, which one to take out, and so on. But once you start having problems, then you'll see people having all types of opinions. So I think that we've got opinions too because of some of the challenges that you are having. So I just thought, let me make that preamble to our meeting. So the approach that we're going to take today, we had the chairperson and acting CEO of ESCOM coming to Parliament, and they made a presentation to us. Then, as I said, then we had an oversight visit to ESCOM with presentations by the Auditor General, with presentations from public enterprises, from National Treasury. So I think more or less we know where we stand. But another thing which prompted the last of us oversight visit to ourselves is the special appropriations bill that we're dealing with of 59 billion rand in the current financial year and the next financial year, 2020-2021. So as I said, that becomes an invitation to us that please come and visit us. So the approach that we are going to take today, all members, the issues that came up, which we'd like to share with the board, questions that we'd like to put to the to the board, obviously the board is supported by the executive team, and perhaps concerns that we were raising, and what expectations perhaps that we are having as the committee. So that's the approach that we are going to take today. And I want us to do it this way. Allow, you know how we do it. Straight to the questions, straight to the point, and I'll allow you, we have different more bites, but I think so that we are able to evenly distribute our questions and our comments. Why don't we start by allowing oral members? I don't want to give you time, but be aware that you want to ask as many questions as possible. But I do want to limit you to the number of questions that you can ask at least the first round. Why don't I give you at most four? If you want to take one, it's fine. But once you go over four, then I'll definitely intervene. Chairperson, before I proceed, that's how I go. I don't know whether you would like to make comments before we proceed.
No, Chairperson and honourable members, it's acceptable what you said. We it is exactly as you described the process up to today. Thank you.
Honourable members, it's your turn. By show of hands, so that I can say 1, 2, 3. Honourable Josephs, Kaiso, Zembo, Kuman, Peters, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon. Thank you, board members. Chairperson, I think in our oversight, obviously, my assessment was, and I think the board probably will have to comment on it, is about governance and leadership. I think I want to ask the board in the context of governance and leadership, is the board at the moment fully capacitated with the necessary skills of people who serve on the board, or is there a shortage? And then also just clarify the term of office again, it's for board members. And then my second question, Honourable Chairperson, is that, and I'm sure the other members would go along with this question, is the outstanding, when we were there, we've asked about the conditions that were set, that were debated out of our engagement with National Treasury, Financial Fiscal Commission, Parliament Budget Office. So we would like to have a report back, feedback from ESCOM on these conditions that they were set that we would like to engage with. I think that's the path we're going to go forward, and would like to know what of that is possible and not possible and what we have to review. We want to walk this road with ESCOM as a parliament, as a country. We want to be part of fixing this in this term of parliament. I think that is my intention and my motive. Despite all the challenges, that is how I see the role of the committee also as chairperson, to engage for the sake of making progress and going forward for the sake of our citizens out there. Thank you very much, chairperson.
Thank you, chairperson. You know, the issue of ESCOM, the number of quite depressing matters around ESCOM. Yeah, let me start here, Chairperson, because we interacted with a number of people during our oversight visit. But there is a specific question that I want to direct to the board.
To what an extent are you aware that ESCOM refused to hand over a section of certain information to be audited by the Office of the Auditor General? Because that was a very serious statement that we picked up in that oversight visit. And secondly, are there any employees that you are aware that they are actually supplying ESCOM as service providers? Because that in itself it may imply a number of things. In as far as you know, declaration of interest by employees of ESCOM, you know, that level of governance. Because that's one of the things that one picked up during the oversight visit, that there is that level of possibility that ESCOM employees themselves are service providers. So that you share with us that light, so that we take a particular view around that particular issue. Now, perhaps also share with us the issue that is related to restructuring at ESCOM at the level of governance, in as far as restructuring is concerned. So that we because there are issues that are related to employees, the threat of retrenchment, etc., you know, and worsened employee relations there. Because now our belief is that where there's instability at the level of production, is actually affecting ESCOM, you know, directly. So what has been your intervention with, in as far as that is concerned, as a board? So let me pause at that stage.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, one should agree with the approach that we are using, that this is a continuation of our meeting in Joburg. Perhaps on a lighter note, this one is not a question necessarily, but a concern worth recording, particularly by the chairperson of the board. Chair, you know, this question of load shedding, when we were there, worth that no cases to even brief us that there would be any such things. And my belief as a layperson is that such critical decisions can't be a 2 minutes type of, you know, decisions. Surely there was a lot of interaction, towing and throwing, and with the recognition that there was a standing committee on appropriations there. There should have been that courtesy that at least when you are about to take that decision or have taken that decision and now are due to pronounce to the country, at least there should have been a courtesy just to tell. Imagine we are there, we are getting calls left, right, and center asking us about what's happening at ESCOM because we are there. But we are just, you know, toothless, you know, individuals who say we also do not know. You know, that shed some kind of, you know, I don't know whether the board is taking this committee seriously or not. I do not know. But then, Chair, let me delve into the question. On the audit opinion, Chair, when Honorable Kaiso's question is answered, we should also so as to avoid taking the board back, as if the same question wasn't answered and responded to, though we're not satisfied.
Something funny. We get a report from your auditors that you are literally refusing
to make submissions. And it hasn't been just for one financial year. It's a carry on some arrangement.
The following morning, we raise questions with your management. Totals, your auditors revert back to the chairperson to say, no. We didn't mean this, we meant that. I mean, it creates suspicion to everyone that perhaps the auditors might have been threatened. Hence, the chairperson said they must write. We need something in writing. Funny enough, when we say they must produce something in writing, they write on the chairperson's notebook. When we wanted something on their letterhead, so that could do some verification of facts, just like we would want the same verification from your good friends, that if you do make submissions promptly and all, would need proof of such. But check also on the general the audit. The response from some of the management and in fact the auditors was that the internal audit is not effective. There is instability. And perhaps one could check now from ourselves as to what happens to the advice and the red flags that are usually raised by the audit and the internal compliance committees. Do you take such into consideration, or it just becomes one of those things? Hence, perpetual arrangement that we see in ESCOM. Chair on labor relations. We had a response which was negative from the labor union, almost at one, those unions, that the recruitment style at ESCOM is rather funny for everybody, particularly the workers. There you have got workers who are there, they understand to be full time. There are those who are contract employees, and there are those who are not sure whether they are casual or what. You have got this bloated organizational structure, and they, as the workers, are not very sure whether some of the positions are just there but not budgeted for, or some are there budgeted for but not filled, or some are due to be considered for cutting down, particularly when it comes to your approach in terms of the plant, the ESCOM plant, because they were saying there are some plants which are in the process of being, you know, closed down, and they are not sure as to what would happen with such employees. That's on labor relations. And besides chair, the normal and the ordinary, what one says,
local labor forum meetings.
How is your general labor relations? Are your workers comfortable? Are your workers not at a stage of panic due to whatever is happening and is due to happen? Are workers taken into confidence of whatever plans that the board has about ESCOM? I don't want to quickly talk about the restructuring of ESCOM chair. I'm talking of the board's initial approach to taking ESCOM back to what it's supposed to be. This chair links with the last question. This question of taking ESCOM to where it's supposed to be. It's on the debt. ESCOM's net debt is currently estimated at about 430 billion. Yes, Chair, we are appropriating, which one could say it's a drop in the ocean compared to this 430 billion. Now, given the National Treasury's ability to project future scenarios, where is the ESCOM board? See ESCOM's net debt in 5 years, 10 years time, given the current state of affairs. Thanks, Chair. I will come back for another bite.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also echo the sentiment to say this is but the continuation of the meeting that we held as an oversight at ESCOM, but one should raise this serious concern because the sole reason for this committee to sort to take that oversight was so that we could gain the deeper understanding and together us, the board and everybody at ESCOM should then come up with an intervention. But sadly, as one may put it, the sentiment that we are echoing doesn't seem to be the sentiment that is being echoed by the same board. Because should it be the same sentiment? I think the board should have prioritized our oversight because it is of very serious importance. It was of very serious importance. Not to mention that no one saw it fit to, as the honourable member has just said, to as a courtesy to inform us of the load shedding that happened just when we were there. But then it was just like business as usual to them. And one would then conclude by saying, one would assume that the same board does not have the interest of this country as we have, or as we want to assist them. The seriousness to them is only when it suits them. And that shouldn't just go unrecorded, Chairperson, because it is of a very serious concern to one. As you always say, Chairperson, who wouldn't want to be police of the money that is passing through us? But we needed to have engagement, and we needed to come up with interventions and the plans to move forward. But having said that, Chairperson, let me let one maybe ask this question that came through the interventions with various stakeholders when we were at that oversight. The very first question, Chairperson, that one would just want to ask as to maybe to establish the capacity that was said by the honourable member. We found that the secretary has failed to record and send the auditors with the minutes of the board and the shareholders meeting. And that is by law
required by Section 88 2D of the Companies Act. And it is perceived as it is business as usual. If it is not, then maybe let the board tell us what are the what led to that challenge? To say, do we have the secretary who doesn't have capacity, or what are the challenges? But in view of that, what is it that the board has done as a recourse to that? And the second question, Chairperson, one would as well ask, in terms of the presentations that we were given there, that the ESCOM does not follow the PFMA when it awards its agenda. And then there, you then ask yourself as to how accurate is the entity's debt book, and if that is accurate, what are then taken to ensure that that is accurate, because the company does not work in line with the PFMA. Chairperson, the third question would then be, it is said that approximately 285 million is expected to be spent to address the defects at Kusile. And of this 285, one then ask, of how much there is ESCOM responsible? And how much there is the responsibility of the service provider? And given that, how is then that being addressed? Because it gives us a serious problem. And having heard that as well from the management, that there are employees who are doing business with ESCOM, who would then ask that, in terms of the board of directors, I want to ask this question directly to the board of directors, to say, are they doing business with ESCOM? So that we can be informed, and so that we can draw the line and be able to can engage on these other matters, Chairperson. And lastly, there's a perception that ESCOM's poor revenue generation is largely due to the low increase approved by NERSA, as we heard through the presentation. But then, what doesn't appear is to what extent that the ESCOM inefficiencies result in the poor revenue generating capacity by the entity. Maybe if you can be taken through that, maybe then one can understand. Let me pause the chapter and I will come for the second part. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Dr. Mabuza and the Board of Directors from ESCOM, as well as your management that is here. Chairperson, I don't know whether I'm allowed to ask the questions that I have. Okay. Chairperson, I'm happy that I heard one of the board members who is here is a member responsible for the audit and risk, and I would believe that that is somebody who is truly aware and realize the magnitude of the challenges that are laid are on his or her shoulders, especially in view of the report that we received from your auditors, FNG Grant Thornton, because they did give us an indication that ESCOM is getting a qualified on irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the past three financial years, which is 2016-17 up to this year, which is worrisome. But also, I mean, if auditors are unable to determine the full extent of the understatement of your irregular expenditure disclosed, then it also says a lot. And Chairperson, I would believe that there is quite a number of things or issues that they have raised that indicates that you have been, as a company, getting repeat findings. I mean, repeat findings on similar matters is a bit worrying. And also, if you are told that there are significant internal control deficiencies in a company, it in my limited understanding of the role of the accounting authority, I would actually believe that the board was found napping in quite a number of areas. Because the board or the accounting authority does not exercise adequate oversight on compliance and applicable legislation, which is the PFMA, including the company act, I mean the company's act itself, but also the ESCOM establishment legislation. So I would believe that it is important that we look at, like one of the colleagues was speaking, I think it's Honorable Josephs, about the skill set that is available or is at your disposal, either in the board, and I would believe that from time to time you do make an audit of the skills that you have in the board and be able to talk to the shareholder minister to augment where you need to be augmented. I mean, if you are told that the company does not keep proper records, Chairperson, that is very worrying. Because it then tells you of the capacity of the company secretary or the company secretariat. So, Chairperson, I thought with regard to this audit outcomes, I must raise that. But there are many other things. In the engagement with different stakeholders, including with your supply chain and procurement team, they actually acknowledged the lack of consequence management in the company. If in your own company officials' presentation, they indicate that because no one has ever worn orange overalls, it means they themselves acknowledge that Akako Vukuzenzele, it's Kwamakulu, you know, at Makulu's house, everybody can come whatever time because you all have equal standing as grandchildren or great-grandchildren in the household. It cannot be that there is an acknowledgement from the very people that because none of our colleagues has ever been arrested for wrongdoing. Therefore, that's why we have this particular challenges. So there's also the issue of labor relations, where we've been given an indication, Chairperson, that there's poor consultation with labor. And I would believe that in the greater scheme of things, labor is your key stakeholder or key and critical stakeholder. And if Solidarity, NUM, NUMSA can say basakhali mathe khanong equally, feeling that there is something wrong in the way in which labor is labor relations is manage in ESCOM, then there's a problem. I just want to say, Chairperson, that we need to understand that poor working relationship with your workforce leads to poor production. And it is worrying to hear that a company of the size and magnitude of ESCOM does not adhere to its agreements. Chairperson, there's also another thing that I wanted to raise, and it's related to, I don't know, there was also a call at one stage that there's a need for lifestyle audits because there's serious indications of conflict of interest that is happening in this company. The workforce, management, and or the executives are doing business with the company. And the other thing is related to, I would want to say, the elephant in the room. Chairperson would remember that it was raised when you came to visit, I mean, to the committee, the issue of the evergreen contracts. Some of them are still remaining with 32 years. 32 years, some of us in the room would be probably RIP, and others would not be in this particular room. There has been calls from this committee on ESCOM and the intention, or whether there's an intention of ESCOM to engage with these contractors to review and renegotiate this contract, primarily because the economic situation demands that, and also the situation has changed since the time of the contract being signed. The other thing, Chairperson, is related to the cost overruns at Medupi and Kusile. But also that every time we talk about the cost overruns or the assets under construction, we're not given the fuller picture. Is it only Kusile in Medupi that is under construction? In many years ago, there was speak of Ingula, and there is now the issues related to the to ESCOM's investment in the concentrated solar power plant, but also the new projects that are under construction that were not being told about. Maybe we are going to be told when there are problems themselves. And Chairperson of the board of ESCOM, it is worrying that you now have this world acclaimed biggest power plant that we're told about, Medupi and Kusile, and we're told already about these new plants already having major defects and the cost of those major defects. The other thing that I would want to find out with regards to the issues related to new contracts or new plants is, why is ESCOM not investing in its own renewable energy plants? Because as ESCOM is being seen as the major emitter or the biggest emitter in the region and in the continent, I would believe that as a company, you equally have a responsibility to make sure that you can contribute to your own emissions reductions. This question, Chairperson, I've noted as a question to the entire board. Does the ESCOM board see themselves as potential savers of ESCOM from the present challenges? I'm raising this because every time we meet, we always say to ourselves, and as the Appropriations Committee, including working together with our colleagues in the NCOP, we have made it known that ESCOM is too important for South Africa's socio-economic development agenda to be allowed to fail. So it is important that even as the board that is entrusted with this responsibility, you actually realize that you've got this fine china of the family in your hands. What is it that you see yourselves doing to make it possible that you can contribute to sustainability of ESCOM? Chairperson, my questions will be all over. The other one is the load shedding. I think my colleagues raised the issue of load shedding. We have been given an indication of the cost of diesel to run your OCGTs. Is it really fair on the South African taxpayer to carry the burden of low-quality coal supply to ESCOM by service providers? And at the same time, allow ESCOM to run these very expensive OCGTs with the cost. We're told at the time we were at Megawatt Park that in the 2 days already there was about 6 billion rand to the cost of the company just to make sure that the lights, despite the load shedding, have to stay on. I don't think it's efficient for us to for ESCOM to continue in this line. In your view, as the board of directors, what is it that DPE and the government, as shareholders, need to do to allow you to successfully run ESCOM and make sure that you implement the turnaround plan as well as the roadmap? What is it that you expect from the shareholder? And also, is the board ready to operate?
That's the last one, and wait for the second bite.
Okay. Is the board ready to cooperate and work with the CRO to really turn around ESCOM? That is the last one for now.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me start by clarifying two things, if my memory serves me well, especially the first one. I think the 6 billion rand was a year-to-date cost of diesel. I know it did come out as if it was a 2 days thing and so on. I think it was a year-to-date cost. Number two, on the question of what SNG was saying about the refusal of with some information. It was during break, and SNG came to me and they said, no, there seems to be some misunderstanding about this. And I said to the auditor, you know, so that I don't misrepresent, can you please write down for me what exactly you want me to clarify? And that's what he did. But on top of that, you also asked the president to together with I think with the CFO of ESCOM and SNG that they write to us for money, apart from what he wrote here. So I'm going to read to you what he wrote so that we should know and understand exactly what that is verbatim in his handwriting. He said, kindly clarify or correct members on the use of code refusal to provide information and code. So that's what he's saying from his side. He says, ESCOM's system of identifying, monitoring, and reporting irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure was inadequate, unquote. Just that let me deal with those two things. And perhaps as a preamble to my presentation, Chairperson, when we go to Parliament and go and argue for recapitalization of ESCOM, you think that as a committee we spend our time at ESCOM because we get bashed like never before, whereas we are bearers of bad news, if you like. But so the pain of going to Parliament and plead your case. And some of the things that are being raised by the honorable members that are thrown at us, that you want South Africans to recapitalize ESCOM. But these simple things, especially around governance and accounting things, are not happening. How do you expect us to go to the electorate and defend this thing? As I said, that once the minister presents this bill to us, it becomes our bill if we believe, and therefore we need to defend. So you should also understand that context. Two issues from my side, and I think again about the issues that are being raised by the members. I think when the board responds to them, I think what you want to get from you is that what are you doing, what are you going to do about those things? Right? It's not just that we. It's
a crisis type of a situation. I want you to be assured that those things are being attended to, you understand them, and the things that you are doing. And also understanding that you are non-executive in the board with some fiduciary responsibilities. I think as parliament, we want to be assured that you understand the extent and the gravity of the problems that have been identified, and we are dealing with those things, and give us some assurance that yes, we are dealing with those things, and so on. We understand the type of problems that we are having. Honourable members have raised issues around the build program, especially around Medupe and Kusile. As things stand, 147 billion rand budget overrun. I don't call that an overrun. It's something else. And if one were to throw in again, we learned that at the moment there is a supplier who has also agreed that he or she was overpaid by 4 billion rand. Again, what type of overpay of 4 billion rand? Then, as the committee was saying, how many others have been overpaid? Do you have the appreciation of the extent of this type of a problem? Coupled with that, who was responsible for that? What was the role of the supplier on that? And what is happening about that? Then, I think the committee is saying, while we are doing all these things, these things can't be incidental. We would like the board to consider a full-blown forensic audit. I think overspend of 147 billion rand warrants a full-blown forensic audit as to what has exactly happened around that. And the committee would like to be reported on what happens there. Chairperson, please advise us about the progress on the appointment of the CEO. I don't need to go into what the problems are with FT and so on and so forth. So let's if we're to begin in there. The debt of ESCOM is definitely exploding. It's not just increasing. Just been growing at an exponential rate. And amongst the major cost drivers is the question of IPPs and the coal prices. We just want to know what is the board doing about that. We were told that there are companies, let alone about the contracts being evergreen. We're told about companies who are making super profit, 50%, 70%, 100%. And we're saying, how do we go to a Gogo Mukwena somewhere in the Northwest and say she must continue subsidizing somebody who's making obscene profits? So I think the challenge is what are you doing about it? What time frames are you giving yourself? Because there's no doubt in our mind that those things should be renegotiated. And as the committee wants to be appraised about the development around that, we can't justify it. We can't justify it to Babu Mgun, someone say he should continue subsidizing people who are just milking it at ESCOM. But one thing which is very evident from us is that project management and contract management is next to zero here for such things. Can the board tell us exactly what type of interventions are doing there? There's none. As I say, if you have got an 80% overrun of your budget, 100% overrun of your budget, you can't talk about project management or contract management. So again, as because we want to say as we move forward, you may not be able to solve all these problems overnight, but you should be able to measure progress or lack thereof.
So I think I would stop at that and wait for the second bite. So Chairperson and your team,
maybe let me check if any of my colleagues want to jump first. I've taken very copious notes of the questions at the risk of trying to allocate the questions. Maybe Oz Rizwayo, that they can take some questions, and then if it's in order, I'll take whatever has not been addressed. But maybe just to deal with the three issues. The first one is the one about we have refused to provide information. Chairperson, when I got to the report, was we have not refused to provide any information. We will never do that. We will always provide all information that's required. Us as a board also do have in committee meetings with the auditors to check if they do get all the necessary information they need to get from management. And for the first time I heard that was after the meeting. And on inquiry, Chair, we were told that the word refuse was not used. It was said that ESCOM is not able to give information, which goes back to the point we're making about the system at ESCOM are not capable of giving the required information to control assurance by the auditors. It's not that ESCOM management refused to give any information. As I've said on behalf of ESCOM to the South Africans on the issue of load shedding, we should and could have perhaps communicated earlier, but as at the time when you were at ESCOM, we were dealing with the problems that we were experiencing of what had happened over the weekend of the conveyor belt problem in Medupi. As at that time, we were of the view that the challenges that we're facing, we have enough in reserves to can meet our demand. But as the day was nearing closer, the evening peak was coming, became clear that we were not going to be able to meet that. It was at that point that we had to make the call. This was in no way being discourteous. I hope honorable members would have to appreciate with respect that there are certain protocols at ESCOM we need to follow in communicating a decision like that without being seen as being disrespectful to members that were in the room. The protocols of how we communicate that is such that given its nature on the security of supply, it would not have been possible for us to say, let's wink and nod, let's whisper to you and tell you just now we're going to go to load sharing. The protocols of communicating that decision is governed by law. There's a particular way we need to communicate load sharing. So this was in no way a discourtesy on our part to you. And it was not out of respect of your office and your president at ESCOM. So I just thought I should deal with those first two issues. So it is not correct, Chair, that we have literally refused to give information to the auditors. So maybe Cindy, you wanna start? Chair, the other point you referred to, the 6 billion
is money we spent of diesel for the year ended March 2019. It's not money we spent over 2 days. And when that was a byline in the news the other day, we had gotten ENCA to formally correct that it was not 6 billion spent over 2 days. It's 6 billion rand is the money we spent last year on OCGTs, both our own and the IPPs. It is nevertheless an expensive exercise, Honourable Peters, to ban diesel. These OCGTs were never meant to be based. They were meant to fill up peaking when you have purpose. But what we've been using them in continued days of load shedding is what has put us to that. In fact, this 6 billion is a very big part of the 20 billion red loss that we reported for the year ended in March 2019. My last comment is to Honourable Peters. Yes, we have today, we have just had our board meeting. We have formally tabled a proposal to the board on Eskom's participation in the renewables space. We have presented a paper that defines where exactly we think we can play and to what extent. We have been offered support by our minister, because by law we currently are not allowed to partake in that. And we have presented, the board has approved today that Eskom should play in the renewables, be it in the PVs and or in the wind, more than what we currently are doing through our service farm. So maybe it's Cindy and then Khalid and then Rod. Pick the questions you able to deal with, and then we'll see what remains. And this boost. Starting with you, Cindy, and then Kali, Broad, and Boost.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, members. I'm glad about the clarification on the refusal of information, because it really worried me. It had never come up. I think in the 1.5 years one has been there dealing with the auditors, it had not come up, and it would have been a disclaimer. Withdrawal or refusing to issue information is basically limiting the scope of auditors, and you're basically disempowering them. And generally, they just disclaim and would not even be able to express an opinion. It's actually the worst form of qualification, and we wouldn't have not known about it. But I'm glad it has been clarified. I am aware that one of our major challenges is in the contract management. And basically where the auditors, aside the minutes, which probably took a long time to deliver, one of the challenges is on the contracts. You find that contracts were all over the show. We did not have a central depository of keeping our contracts. As a result, when auditors will ask for a particular contract, it will take a very long time. We spent time last year in making sure that we had a central depository to ensure that we've got one central record of all the contracts that we've got as a group. We still have a challenge in that. Whilst we've got a central record of it, some contracts are still sitting in different power stations, and you find that it takes a long time before the auditors can actually put their hands around it. It's a big issue. We are investing on a system that allows us, at the press of a button, contract information is made available. As a result, a number of our variations are caused by contracts expiring without our teams being aware that, by the way, a contract is expiring. All of a sudden, it dawns on us that a contract is expiring. It is a systems issue, but we also do believe it is a discipline issue, and it is something that we've been working on. In fact, when we started as this board last year,
we ended up being called the no board, because when people brought variations and or to say, can we extend it once we design a new tender process, we used to actually refuse as a board. And that is how then the teams will can continue to spend on contracts that have expired, and as a result it becomes irregular. We ended up as a board having to actually embrace this to say, until there is a proper contract management system, which I am glad to say that there is a large improvement. In fact, Caleb can shows us a graph which demonstrates the single source where we say there's no other supplier, so we have to buy from supplier so and so. Those have increased. Even the modifications have increased largely. When we started, remember, the previous year, 2018, which we had to release results late that had not been released, the irregular expenditure was only about 3 billion. We had to work tirelessly and go back, and that is when we actually were able to find in the system even contracts of the previous years. Going back to 2015, that is when our irregular expenditure for 2018, March 2018, actually came up to 21 billion. Now we are closing 2019. We've just closed 2019. The new irregular expenditure is about 6 billion. So from the 21 billion of the previous year, we have 6 billion in 2019, and we've closed on 25 billion. One of the biggest challenges in these in the irregular expenditure is the fact that whilst we are busy with the cleanup, we've got SWAT teams that are busy with the cleanup, and we now know our irregular expenditure. One of the concerns of the auditors was that we couldn't even quantify it. We've been able to go into the detail and have quantified irregular expenditure. It will be very, it's now impossible that the auditors will come and tell us of irregular expenditure that we had not identified ourselves. That is where the issue of us not being able to provide information came from, because auditors said they were the ones that will come in and identify irregular expenditure that we were not aware of. Now we actually are the ones who give them a list of irregular expenditure, because we had teams that went to review every contract that was above a billion rand, and we were able to identify where the challenges were. One of our big...
Cindy, just a second. I think let's apologize. We're meeting at a very odd hour, and I can see we don't have even water. Who can help us and try and see at least that we get water? As comic is fed up when we were at Eskom chapters, and so I see it's outside meeting hours. Derek, who can we get just at least to get water? Okay, our apologies, honorable members, Eskom board members, Jefferson. What has been used? We're meeting here before. No, we're not totally, you know, that's what happened where, if I may share with you, when the security branch were interrogating you and you were not going to sleep, after about 36 hours, you see somebody coming in with a blanket and you think that they are going to sleep. They just put the blanket there and continue interrogating you. So don't read that in us that we're just showing you water, but we're not going to give you water. The bottles are half empty, most of them they've been used. That's why we're trying to arrange water. So for interrupting you, Wede.
Thank you, Wede. Yeah, we were born on the same day as the chairperson. I guess members, and I'm sure the member was looking at the note 51 of our annual financial statements of 2019, which will demonstrate that by the time we closed the audit of 2018, which was the year we came in, that is when we put a lot of effort in doing the cleanup together with the auditors. And that is when we had closed
at 21 billion in 2018. And as you can see that the following year, which is the year we just closed, 2019, the additional irregular expenditure was only 6 billion. And I'm not saying only 6 billion because I'm trivializing that amount. However, it was the reduction from where we had been. And out of that, we had been spending the whole year talking to National Treasury in giving us condonation because this amount will always remain as an irregular expenditure. Hence, the closing has gone up to 25 billion until National Treasury have given us a condonation. It will always remain as irregular expenditure. We've been working with National Treasury on this one where we've given them submissions, and understandably so, when we say to National Treasury we need a condonation on this one, the invoices, for example, of a billion that they condoned last year is tedious because they want to see, have you done a disciplinary on this particular contravention? Where are the people? We'd like to make sure that the contract has been cancelled, and cancellation of a contract is not that easy. So it is taking a very long time, and at the moment, our challenge and where we really need support to the question that was asked is ensuring that National Treasury assists us in the condonations because we have done as much as we can because these are previous contracts that we found had already been entered into.
Richard, maybe let me just add on this point so that it doesn't get lost. Contracts that have been irregularly entered into, they remain irregular until they've gone their full term. So you've got one of two options. You have to continuously procure as per the irregular contract irregularly, or you've got to terminate the contract and pay the consequences of breaching the contract. That's the point Cindy is trying to make, that you have the supplier. Only they can supply you this. The way you have secured their supply was irregular. So every year, that contract, for as long as it is alive, it is an irregularly entered contract and it continues to be irregular.
What are we saying? I think let's make a follow-up so that to put this issue aside. The basis, the chairperson of the board of our concern. Perhaps let me read this chairperson, you know, verbatim. The auditor says, one, audit opinion issued for Eskom has been qualified on irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the past three financial years, 2016-17 to 2018-19. That's one. Two, the one now, which raised our concern. Besides your poor contract management and record keeping, that one is separate. I can read it, but I don't want to bother the meeting with that one, Chairperson. But this one says, we were unable to determine the full extent of the understatement of the irregular expenditure disclosed. And we're also unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to confirm the fruitless and wasteful expenditure included in the notes. And I remember I asked the question, and I would always, you know, Chairperson, I would always start by putting a disclaimer that I am not a financial guru. The same disclaimer that I would put in front of the board. But at least with that simple knowledge of putting 1 plus 1 is equal to 2, one can add and get the sums. And I said to the auditor, but you are questioning the correct terminology that you should have put here, that this is a disclaimer. It's not a qualified opinion because you could not receive documentation to deal with. And it was at that stage where they said, we have been trying, but Eskom is refusing.
That is what I was saying. So Jefferson, his explanation doesn't seek to respond to this. Perhaps as we listen to Jefferson, we will still get the reasons behind the escalation, the 100% escalation, particularly at Medupi and Kosele. Because you would link those to these sour audit outcomes. That there's linkage. But as I'm saying, this feedback that we are getting is unfortunately not addressing this particular concern. The feedback that we are getting, Jefferson, responds to the proper record keeping of your management. That perhaps because of whatever you have just explained, then you had no record keeping, hence you could not account for the contract. You know, but for duplication of payment, that has got nothing to do with that, Jefferson. That you had contracted wrongfully and then now you have to continue with that. That's separate. But double payment, triple payment, and all that, it's separate. And if you look at the manner in which Eskom is run, it tells you it cannot be that when I said, Jefferson, before you were here as the chairperson of the board, 2011, somewhere there. There were figures, budgeted figures, for the construction of Medupi and Kosele. A built project which was at 71 has now escalated to 140-something. A built project which was estimated at 80-something has now rocketed to 160-something, regardless of addressing the defects, because the more you delay the build program, is the more defects occur, which then would also account to your irregular and wasteful expenditure. So, but as I'm saying, let us not begin to want to mince issues here. Let's deal with these issues as they come. If it so happens that, because we have been with auditors even from our the past experience, we haven't just been here. We know what the chairperson is saying, that the auditors would request all documentation even before they start, and there would be management letters and all that. But it would be after all has been tried but failed that they would then come up with a particular financial, audit opinion. Hence now they are saying, you refused, because it means they tried all their best. Hence they could put this one now in the second one. But I'm saying, Jefferson, this is the key issue. And if we would begin to want to politicize this issue and brush over it, it doesn't affect. Because it is here where it cracks most. It is here where you see Eskom nose diving. And we just cannot brush away over it.
I allowed you, Honorable Minister, to come in because I could see you were itching. Yeah, I'm not going to allow. Let's allow the team to respond, and then we'll have the second bite. Honorable guys, can you bear with me? Let's just allow them to Ms. Kuyan, I think you, I don't know whether you did introduce yourself as the chair of the audit committee, the chair of the audit committee, that's why it's coming to you. Okay, please continue.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies if the member feels probably as I wasn't trying to mislead you deliberately. The issue of information not being made available. For example, one of the things that transpires in the irregular expenditure is that the auditors will say to us, you tell us, give us your note 51, which is your irregular expenditure, and you must tell us that this is what you believe. It has been the contraventions of PSMA where you've used sole source, where you've had variations, where you've contracted with people without a CIDP certificate. And we'll then give them that list. To the extent that they will go and audit and in case find something that was not on the list, that is where the auditors have indicated that sometimes they can then not rely on our information because they have managed to find for themselves something that was not on the list that our management had given them. And it is then that the following audit, which was the 2019, where we were there at the board for the full year, where we even requested our team to say, don't wait, because the PSMA audit, which is the one that leads to irregular expenditure, is only done at year end. So for the first time, we say we had asked the team to say, don't wait for year end. Start at interim, and you work in making sure that you go and find and almost do your own audit before the auditors come in. So that is where the irregular expenditure comes in. Where the issue around contract management comes in is also around that area. On the auditors saying we were not providing information, in fact, I remember one example. It was on the issue of McKinsey, where it was at the height when we were about to claim the amount. So that particular contract, which had already been put in our books as a reportable irregularity, where we were reported to the independent regulator, when they needed to see progress, it took a very long time for them to get that information because that was at the height of the legal team working with the documentation. The finance team could not put their hands on it. I remember very well when the auditors came to complain to say they do not get information as and when they need it. It is not because probably the team did not want to give them the information, especially at a corporate level. Maybe at the power stations where we are very far from a corporate, there could be issues of deliberately withholding the information. However, I remember some of the frustrations came on some of the critical information that was then taken away from other areas but kept in the office of the chairman because we were now dealing with some of those. The issue of the Chinese, for example, on who got a contract without a CIDP certificate. Also, getting that information, the auditors, it took a while. And when they do not get the information, they will then put it down as it's a reportable irregularity. And that is where there will be delays in information. And when auditors end up reporting the management, we'll make sure that they can find the what they are looking for. But on other contracts, for example, the very same Chinese contract, when they were looking for it, they looked in the normal areas where contracts are kept, only to find that contract had been removed again from where it used to be kept at a central in a central space. There hasn't been a deliberate withholding of the information from the auditors. Delays, yes, and in fact, you find that between legal, who would want to hog the information because they believe on the confidentiality, we'll end up having to intervene. So and the auditors have really raised the frustration in that area.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I want to address two questions in particular. Maybe the first question is linked to Honorable Kumani, who was talking about the low revenues that Eskom receives from the regulator and what's the reasons therefore. I think firstly we must acknowledge that the regulator, when Eskom applies, it has its own methodology, which basically says, based on what the regulator deems efficient costs, that should be recovered in the allowed revenue, as well as a fair return on Eskom's asset base. Our view is in terms of the recent regulatory decisions. One is has the regulator applied its own methodology in terms of the interpretation? We have a view that in certain areas, we don't believe the regulator has applied the methodology as we interpret it. Secondly, there's also consistency of the regulator in applying its methodology. Having said that, ultimately, in the allowed revenue, Eskom would motivate its operating costs, its primary energy costs, whatever the assumption is on IPP costs, and our assets and our asset base, and the return we should get to enable us to meet our debt service commitments. Regulator then conducts its public process and gets inputs. So to get back to the member's question, I think it then comes down to when the regulator produces their reasons for decisions and those justifications of what costs were allowed, what costs were not allowed. We as Eskom will then assess that and go through our governance and decide if we believe that the regulator was consistent in applying the methodology. Chairperson, that's why you'll find in the recent decisions, the Eskom board has decided to review that. Now, this is an important element because I think it links into the second and the important question. You asked the question is, where will our debt go? We're currently sitting at year-end at 440 billion rand worth of debt. We currently, as at September, have a debt stock of about 454 billion rand. As long as through the regulatory mechanism of the allowable revenue, if Eskom is not generating sufficient cash from operations to cover our debt service commitments, we would effectively be using one credit card to pay for another credit card because we can't meet that current debt service commitments. So the regulatory allowance of Eskom's revenue, on the assumption that we fully agree, as highlighted in the previous discussions, where we inefficient, we agree that that should not be passed on to the consumer. But once you've dealt with that element, then you should be getting your full cost of capital to be a sustainable entity. So, Chairperson, in where will the debt go in 5 to 10 years? It's a function of many assumptions. What will the regulator allow? What will be the amount of capital expenditure that Eskom will spend in the next few years? On average, what we've done in the last 2 years to try to manage our costs within the current decisions, we need to understand where the big cost items are, what's in our control, and what we can implement immediately. So if I just quickly touch on our big cost items, the one, I think it's even a question, Honorable Chair, your primary energy costs being your coal costs and what are you doing about it. And again, it's the issue of on our coal contracts, we have committed contracts, a long-term, short-term and medium-term contracts. But it's now about renegotiating some of those contracts to reduce the input cost to Eskom's production cycle. And that's a big element because it's about 60 billion rand of our total cost base just from a coal perspective. The other item on your production cost, big item, as through the various rounds of the independent power producers that have come online, we see that linked to the increased supply from IPPs being allowed and producing, that production has increased over time, but it also came with increasing costs. If we just look at the last financial year, we spent 25 billion rand on independent power producers costs. So So again, if you want to look at a big cost item to help reduce the input cost to the overall tariff, one has to look at IPPs and that possibility of renegotiating those. Then, Chairperson, if we continue down our income statement, we literally left with two key items, your staff and employee costs. As at March, we set at about 33 billion rand. On that, Chairperson, currently we've made the assumption of a natural reduction in staff complement going forward. And in terms of, you would understand that we currently have a three-year agreement with the labor unions in terms of those staff members at around 7% per annum, and whereas at management level, we've given in this financial year less than inflation. And there has been no bonuses in the last financial year, and there's no bonuses in this financial year. We make the assumption that we just continue with natural attrition. We were asked the question, what about the possibility looking at voluntary separations? You will understand, Honorable Chair and committee members, we don't even have the money to pay for voluntary separation packages. So for now, that is off the card. And then it really comes down to what do you do with the debt. On the capital expenditure, just to complete the big cost base of Eskom, 2 years ago we were spending 55 billion rand on capital expenditure. We do acknowledge, yes, we are spending about half of that on Medupi and Tisiwe. But in the last 2 years, that number has dropped to around 45 billion rand, and in the last financial year, if I recall, it was about 36 billion, and we're currently projecting that level of capital expenditure. So we believe that in Eskom, we are looking at the cost that we can control and what we can do about it. And in terms of impacting on the tariff going forward, as part of our turnaround, we've said that we need to reduce Eskom's cost base by 2023 in total by about 33 billion rand. It doesn't get implemented over 1 year, it's over the 5 years, understanding that in the short term, you're also going to balance the limited cash resources that Eskom has together with the urgent requirements in terms of the operational challenges, in terms of Eskom having the ability to meet the supply and demand of the country. So in the short term, we are spending the money in the areas that it's needed. But we as a board have also acknowledged, and that is why we actually here at this committee, that we could not meet our cash requirements solely from the basis of what we could extract as efficiencies in the short term. That is why we've come through the appropriation committee. But to get back to the point, I think it's a combination of many factors. And let's not underestimate, every time that the plant perform and you use the more efficient plant and reduce the OCGTs, you reduce the need to rely on expensive coal plant, and less coal is required for transport and dedicated to the mine from a conveyor perspective. That reduces your production cost, which has that positive impact on our financials. So to the committee members, we acknowledge these areas that we are looking at. It will take time, but at the end of the day, we can't at this point say this is where the debt will go. It will be based on a number of assumptions. But whatever those assumptions, to be sustainable, if you're not going to cover your cost of borrowing, then what happens is that effective credit card balance starts accumulating, and we understand once it gets to a certain level, that compounding effect of adding more debt and compounding interest, it becomes a very significant amount over a short period of time. I think, Chair, I just wanted to highlight that. And maybe for myself, as the CFO of Eskom, just to reiterate the ARC chairman's comment, we are committed to providing the information what is available in the system. There's obviously certain areas that are currently not available, and that links to the question of making sure that going forward we pay attention to addressing the audit findings and in particular the repeat findings. But from my side and management and to the audit committee, I have not said once to any auditor, you will not supply that information. It's important not only for the board to understand this, but more importantly, I think in the disclosure of our financials over the past 2 years, I think it's a reflection of the transparency that this board is bringing to the financials. It's not nice to stand up in front of the media and to report a 20 billion loss, a 10 times increase from the previous year of 2 billion rand. But I think it's important on the journey that we're taking, and we understand, as you said, Chairperson, the seriousness of what we're dealing with, but also making sure we do our part as the board and being accountable for the areas that we control. There's many areas that are challenges that are not in our direct control, where we need the support of committees like yourself, the shareholder, and other key stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you. Sis Lucy, before you come in, let me deal with these 2 points raised by Honorable Joseph. The direct question was the leadership and governance. I think when this board was put in place, Honorable Chair, the issues that were facing ESCOM at the time were issues of governance, issues of malfeasance. So I guess the skill set that was put in place was a skill set that had to deal with that. And I do think we have done pretty well in that space. In the cleanup. As Cindy said, when you even take the irregular expenses, instead of settling on what was, we had to go back. We actually at a point said we can't go beyond 2015, we must draw a line. Because the further you go, the more you find that is a problematic area. And without putting blame to the auditors, with respect, these are the very auditors that were in office during this period. So it also does not sit well with us when we are told by the auditors in their report that we have been inefficient, we have not been able to have consequence management. What I do want the honorable members to take note of, these overruns are not overruns that started on the 22nd of January 2018. This debt did not just last week become 450 billion. These are overruns that have been building over time, as Honorable Mlenzana said. By 2010, there was a certain number for what it was going to cost to build Medupi and Musile. Over the last 8 or 10 years, these overruns have occurred. What the question that the Honorable Chair has asked, what is it that you're doing with this? As these build projects are coming to an end, there is a flood of claims that are coming in, where the contractors are now putting in their claims. It is at this point that we have people that we are contracting that help us review the claims. You would have, I think the number I've seen, when you look at the claims that have been put in, there are about 231 billion for a project that we know it's 90% complete and we have spent about 140 billion on. So even the manufacturers, the OEMs, the contracting companies, they keep throwing because they know now, firstly, the contract of the company that does this claim evaluation for you is coming to an end, and secondly, it's a final account that are coming in. So at this point, that's when we are more vigilant That is why you hear us saying we have rejected. In some instances, we have found what the contractor is claiming. We say, no, we don't owe you. Actually, we have overpaid you before. So that would, as a general statement, but in its nature, these things we've got to go through them line by line by line. So all what we're saying, Chair, is we are going through them with a fine tooth comb to be sure that we do what we pay is what we should have paid. And there are instances that they've been double invoicing. And it's Eskom employees that sign the invoice and push it to head office, pay now, you can pay. Because the supplier gives it to someone at Eskom to say, here is my invoice. So this is not only on the new bills, also on other suppliers, whether it's on spares and those types. So we are now flooded by those. So that's what we from our side are doing. So the skill set that is now required is a skill set that should augment and supplement the current skill set that you have. Because there's more than now just clean up, and there's some operational issues that are emerging. So we are hoping that when the shareholder, we do have actually an absolute number of vacancies on the board. We do have challenges in the audit committee that we need more than one chartered accountant on the audit committee. So we have those challenges, and we do hope when, as the president has said, when they fill up and beef up the board, they would affect that. The term is 3 years, so I think by and large our term started January 2018, it takes us to March 2021 or earlier. The conditions for funding, Honorable Joseph, yes, we have been engaging with Treasury. They've given us the conditions. We have gone back to them and have given our input on them. Preliminarily, we have pointed out that some of these conditions really are more pertinent to the DPE than they are to Eskom specifically. And by and large, either than the quantum and the volume of transactions of a particular level, we don't think there are any conditions in there that are such that we would not be able to meet. By and large, we do give those reports. We may have to give those reports maybe more frequently than what we've been doing. So by and large, I take the point. Our biggest issue is firstly in the contract that we entered. It's in the continued management of this contract that I have asked the Exco in my acting capacity as CEO to say, can they each, the business people, each tell me what are the top 10 contracts in each of their businesses? Where are they in terms of the duration of those contracts? How happy are they at business with the suppliers on the quality of those contracts? And what are they putting in plan to renew those contracts if they should be renewed? Because most of the condonations that Sistine was referring to is, we've had this contract, nobody has ever bothered to check how far is it from expiring until the day it expires. Then you have to rush to say, by the way, we do need to get coal, and the coal supply contract has come to an end. Let's now go and extend it. And the time to extend it takes long, then you end up continuing to be supplied out of contract, and you have to go back and try and find condonation. So, Sisbusi, if you can come in and take what you can, and then Jan, will you deal with all those Midupi-related issues, the overruns? Is it you or Sisbusi first? Is it... Jan, why don't you go first and then Sisbusi will come.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was also a question, what other projects are we doing? There was this question. We are getting ready to do a battery storage project, so we're in the process getting some approvals, but outstanding is a PFMA approval from the Department of Public Enterprises, so that's one project. We also, the reduction of emissions, so those projects we're doing at the various power plants. Then we're also replacing control and instrumentation equipment at some of the power stations. And then an ongoing one, each and every year, are transmission, the big overhead lines and substations that we are doing. So that adds up to the annual between 30 and 40 billion that the CFO was just referring to. In terms of the Medupi and Kusile costs, we haven't finalized for any of these two stations currently the cost of completion. So we are still using the 2014 budgets. And the budgets, what we refer to is a P50 and a P80 budget. Now, P50 is when 50% of all the identified risks materialize. And then a P80, as we refer to, when 80% of all those risks materialize. So for Medupi, the cost budget at this point in time is 135 billion is the P50 budget, where the P80 budget is 145. However, this excludes the interest during construction, and that we determine as and when we go forward, and that's anything between 40 and 50 billion, so we haven't finalized that. And then what is outstanding at Medupi as well is the FGD, flue gas desulfurization, the flue gas desulfurization, sulfurization, that's better. We estimate that would be anything between 35 to 40 billion. So that still needs, that project is in the process of being finalized. So the planning has been finalized. So if we then move over to Kusile, the P50 budget, 2014 budget, is 156 billion. However, that includes the FGD, and the P80 is 161. But this still excludes the interest during construction. The contractor overpayments, I think we have spoken about that. Yes, we believe there are some overpayments at Kusile specifically. There are five contractors that we are looking at this point in time, together with the SIU, Special Investigating Unit, and the Hawks, as well as our own claim specialists, as well as forensic contractors, consultants. And that's where the 4 billion is coming from, the estimate at this point in time. So it's not a final figure. So it's five contractors that we're looking, which we believe we may have overpaid an amount of up to 4 billion. The over expenditure, we've spoken about that. The issue of coal prices, the excessive or obscene profits, Honorable Chair, that you mentioned, we are currently looking at all our contracts. We're looking at what we believe the cost of mining a ton of coal is, and then we're looking at what we pay. So we're in the process, together with the Department of Public Enterprises as well as the mining, to approach. And we have already had one session with the miners to discuss the issue of the cost of coal. I think, Honorable Chair, there was another question in terms of the staff at the three stations, Grootvlei, Komati, and Andrina. Yes, which we plan, they're coming to the end of life. And the question was, what will we do with those staff? Obviously, those staff will be redeployed to the rest of generation. So it's not to let them go. So as soon as we get to the stage that we decommission or we close down some of those units, those people, those staff, those colleagues of ours that's not required anymore will then be redeployed to somewhere else in the generation business. I think that's Chairman.
Thank you, Ian. Chair, as I near my point to leave, let me pick up some of the issues. Starting with people, staff doing business with ESCOM. When we got here over 15 months or so ago, I think we found a number that was close on 80 people in the organization that were doing, were suppliers to ESCOM. We took a decision and we communicated to say on a particular day, on the 30th of March, no one should be employed by ESCOM and also be a supplier to ESCOM. And we offered amnesty to say people have got an opportunity to make a choice whether they want to be suppliers or they want to be awarders of tenders. They certainly cannot be both. We said this must happen by a certain time. The time for when to choose came and passed. We then said anyone who is found to be supplying ESCOM post that date whilst being an employee would be subject to a process that may lead to instant and summarily dismissal. Furthermore, we would blacklist that company that is supplying ESCOM and will terminate that contract. And also we'll ensure that no SOE does business with that company. That was the one side. So anybody that continued to post that and we were to be aware of that, we will implement that sanction. We have then also embarked on a lifestyle audit
let me interrupt you on that part because I think the honourable member, there's an allegation that the acting CEO is making, is doing business with ESCOM. I think address that.
Yes, and the CEO is also, the statement you made about the cut-off days, were there people after the cut-off days was identified in terms of your work? That would also be helpful for us to share with us if there were any people that didn't comply with your cut-off date and what action you've taken and how many.
So, Chair, as you answer that, perhaps if you can, what was the policy before then, right? And now you have spoken about the policy after you have intervened, and just how do you move forward? You get my question, yeah. I just thought that before you go, because I know that's the question.
Yeah, I had it for your questions, Chair. You have asked it in a very pleasant way. I was going to come back to it. So coupled with that, we then introduced this lifestyle audit. And then it took longer than what it should have, but we have embarked on that. The lifestyle audit has raised certain anomalies, and those anomalies have been followed. To the extent there was more to that, there have been some disciplinary cases. Currently, there are about 284 cases that are currently active and under investigation by institutions like the SIU and the Hawks. On the lifestyle audit, there were six executives that we had to separate with. The majority of them were in group capital. On the new build referrals, as I said, we have referred most of these to the NPA, and you would be aware that some authorities, like the U.S. authorities, have been involved in trying to get to the bottom of those. We have also continued to, I spoke about the claims, and we engaging some of the suppliers, the contractors, and you would be aware that as recent as late last week, we also have laid some charges against one of the section of an audit firm. On the question of conflict, Chair, as I sit here, I am not conflicted with ESCOM. As I sit here, I am not doing business with ESCOM. When I was asked to take the chairmanship of ESCOM, I did indicate to the minister at the time that I am, if the minister was not aware, I am an executive chairman of a company called Sphere that owns a company called Babcock that is a boiler serve contractor to Eskom, and also Sphere owns a company called Honeywell, and Honeywell is part of the control instrumentation of Eskom. Having disclosed that, the minister said that notwithstanding, I still would like you to take this position. I said, thank you, minister. In that case, I will then put my interest and leave Sphere and put all my interest in Sphere in a blind trust and come into this job. I have no involvement in anything that involves Sphere, Babcock, or Eskom. As a matter of course, I don't sit in any of such meetings. I refuse myself. So as I sit here, I'm clearing my conscience that I am in no conflict. I, as Jabu, have no supply relationship with Eskom. All that which has been done has been disclosed by me. Nobody has suddenly woken up and discovered that I have a financial interest in a company that does business with Eskom. Secondly, these relationships, the Babcock-Eskom relationship predates Sphere owning Babcock. They go back 8 years, some of them. They predate my shareholding in Sphere, but I have disclosed and I manage the conflict, as I said, by putting this in a blind trust, and I manage this by recusing myself and never participate on anything that has to do with this, with Sphere and any of its shareholding. The other matter was exit. I have said so in the Zondo Commission myself that I am related to my wife by marriage. She is related to her brother who is in mining, who supplies Eskom. He went and paid for his fees to go and study mining engineering. So I'm not surprised that he is in that business. But I have absolutely nothing to do with that. I disclosed that as recent as when I was appointed. Because the Eskom form asks you those kind of questions. So do you know, do you relate it to anybody who supplies a supplier to Eskom? I've disclosed those. So I honestly don't have any conflict, Chair. To the extent I had interest, those were declared and they are managed. On the question of employee relations, Chair, there's never going to be a perfect labor relations. Eskom management and Eskom workers, they have not had a good relationship. I don't think we have managed our relationship with employees as best as we should have. That said, in the last 3 months, we have tried very hard to reach out, to engage, to continuously communicate and share with them what we are finding. There are policy issues that we did not make. It's the government that took a decision that it would buy from IPPs. I will be defying government decision if I don't. Two, it's the government that made a decision that is going to unbundle and separate us from. I can do no more either than implementing that government position and ensure that as I implement it, I do not undermine and violate workers' rights. And to that end, we have been able to do that. In as far as on the on the wage side, on the bargaining issues, we have engaged robustly as we should. You would be aware we took strikes. You would be aware part of the start of load shedding was at the middle of wage negotiations. It is in the nature of wage negotiations. Once we have settled, we have honored our part of that bargain. I have not, as this leadership of Eskom, we are honoring the recognition agreement signed by Eskom and the labor unions of 2000 in word and in spirit. I have made it my business in my acting capacity to read it cover for cover. We are recognizing them, we're engaging them as much as we should.
But the relationship can always be better. It is contested areas. We will continue to have to articulate the challenges that we have. We have got a clear line from the chief, the president, that we should not retrench. So we continue to engage them in trying to find ways in which we can cover costs. So, Chair, unless there is something else, we will note the progress on the GCO. The shareholder appoints the CEO at Eskom. We have followed what we should be doing in terms of our MOI. About 3 weeks ago, we did submit to the shareholder the three names in order of preference of those people from whom the shareholder must appoint. We did that. And the minister today, when he was announcing the Eskom paper, did indicate that by next week sometime they would have announced the new CEO. So, Chair, thank you very much. If I have left anything, Honourable Peter, so we continue to raise the issues where we think the shareholder can help us for us to do a little bit more and a little better. It would be less than modest for me to say yes, we are the best port you can ever have. All what I can tell you, we are committed South Africans. We put the amount of hours and time. Khalif has asked me to mention this. In a year that ended in March 2019, we've had no less than 60 board meetings. A year has no 60 weeks. We've had no less than 60 board meetings. So we continue to give our best, but maybe our best is not good enough. For whilst we're here, we're going to continue, and we promise we will fail because we're human, but not because we would not have given it our best. So, thank you.
Chairperson, the chairperson had requested it's 6,000. Is the question directed to him, or is the question which can wait? So the other board members of the remaining okay. That's fine. That's the chairperson you had requested. But before you go, thank you for that input, and thank you for leading your team to have this engagement while dealing with a very difficult and painful matter. So we are all in it. On a lighter note, before you go, there was one honourable member who got in there. She's our boss somewhere, and Honourable Makubela. She's a sister to Dr. Makubela. So I could see the way she was looking at that we must be careful of the questions that we ask, because she's our boss somewhere. I think we've behaved, but she's out. I wanted to introduce her before she left. But, Chair.
Last time the chairperson, when we were here, he said he was having visitors from China, is going to leave. Now, again today, he's going to leave the meeting. Although I don't have a question, but I'm just checking that because we are a committee that has come to convene people to be here.
Or you remember that when we started, that's where that was the first apology that he made, that he must be in Johannesburg tomorrow to look after our lives, because as you can see that the whole executive it's here. I see the COO is here, and you have got the whole board here. So I said no, we are going to give him the question so that before he leaves. He must have attended to those questions, but I just wanted to say these comments before you. I think there should be no doubt about our commitment, all of us, to see Eskom on its feet. That's why we're all here. We had to request from the National Assembly that can we be given a chance so that we can engage with you. The Parliament was sitting and dealing with important matters, but because Parliament understands the importance and the gravity of the issues that we're dealing with, we're giving the permission to ask for a way to apply and the management of Parliament to consider, and then they agreed that we, so that one shows the importance that we give to the process that we're involved in. And as we're saying that as this committee and as Parliament, we've got no doubt in our mind that we want to see Eskom on its feet. That's why these honorable members here in the Appropriations Committee, they went to Parliament with the report. And I must say there was no disagreement about that Eskom should be supported by recapitalizing it. There was none across all political parties. We agreed. Where there was disagreement was how, what type of conditions, where do we put those conditions? Are those the principal legislations? Are they in regulations? Are they ministerial conditions? But I'm just saying that they shouldn't doubt our commitment into making sure that we all succeed. This is not a board's issue. It's not a Parliament's board. I mean, Parliament's issue. It's our issue. So having said that, that we walk the talk. We have gone to Parliament and we've recommended the recapitalization of Eskom, and the National Assembly for now agrees with us. This NCO which was dealing with that. But we're then saying that everybody should play his or her role. It can't just be government who's coming in here. That's hence the issues which revolve around the board. You say these are your issues, especially as they relate to government and the oversight function and so on and so forth. So they will come to you. And management has got a role to play. And we're very strong on that. And then labor. Again, we can't run away from the fact that Rome is burning here, and we're all trying to put off the fires. So labor should also come to the party. But we seem to be getting some reluctance when it comes to the contractors. You see the statement that I make, that people are still coming in with huge claims and so on. We can't allow that. And I think we should be in one as far as that is concerned. That can't be allowed. We won't allow that while everybody else is trying to. Because when you must put a 59 billion rand here, when you approve a 23 billion rand, you are taking from someone. There's an opportunity cost somewhere. There's a trade-off somewhere that you are dealing with. So I think the board, and that's what, again, we were stressing to the ministers responsible for this, that as far as the OEMs, suppliers, and so on, they should understand that if Eskom is not there, their businesses are also not there. So it's to our collective interest that we protect and we are leading by playing our part. So we would expect everybody else to come on board. The communities should also come in. The question of non-payment of services and of electricity. Again, I know there's a joint committee that is where COPTA is there and so on. We have said to Parliament that we need everybody to play his or her role, including the payment of services. One writer that we put there, we said, let's just be very careful that we don't transfer inefficiencies of Eskom to the end users. I think that's right that we do put on. Chair, I just thought let me make those comments before you leave. We'll interact with your colleagues as you leave in grand style. And I'll then say, let's take about a 10-minute break to allow the chairperson to leave. No. In fact, I just want you to grab something. There's at least we got something. Please pardon us. We didn't want to stab you or to make you crazy, and so on. We'll take 10-minute break, and then we'll reconvene. Thank you very much.
Just to say, we do apologize for not take you seriously. To the extent we have not been able to, just was issues of diary that we could not meet the issues. We do apologize.
Mr.
Compton will lead the board.
let him come to the hot seat then. But colleagues, please help yourselves. They have got some little bit of refreshment and so on. And then after 10 minutes, let's reconvene.